All right. Well, we have a pretty good crowd here, so I think we'll just go ahead and get started. We'll get started with some, see what do we have on the agenda. Do a roll call first, sort of go through and everybody can introduce themselves. So just to start off, I'm Tim Malone, Community Development Deputy at the Capital Region Council of Governments. And I will just start calling on people as I see them on my screen, because I think that's probably the easiest. Martha.
Hi, I'm Martha Keneally. I'm with Riverfront Recapture, Park Development Manager. I think Mark Nicole, who's our Director of Park Planning and Development, has joined the group previously and has had a conflict going on, and so he asked me to join and start coming to the meetings. Just happy to be here and participate in any way we can.
Excellent. All right, next on my screen, Jerry Ledger.
Hello, I live in Granby, Connecticut, and I am present on the trail everywhere from Avon North, trying to make sure that things happen when they need to be happening. One of the interesting developments is that after 3 years, the Connecticut government has decided to install a crossing light on Route 20. And so they have the wiring in for the buttons, but they haven't moved the buttons to the right side of the trail yet. They were always on the wrong side of the trail. They have one of the foundations for the tower that's going to carry the light system. The other foundation hasn't been started yet. So maybe by the spring, we'll have two foundations for the tower.
Oh, that'd be nice. All right, next on my screen is Renata.
Good afternoon, Renata Bertotti, Town of Newington, Town Planner.
All right, I've got Bruce Donald.
Hello, everybody. I'm sorry I haven't been able to make these. I've had a conflict for most of the year, but East Coast Greenway Alliance, and I am the chair of the Connecticut Greenways Council.
All right, Nathaniel Darby.
Yes, I'm Nathaniel, the assistant town planner for the town of Canton.
Excellent. All right. Lon.
Good afternoon, Lon Hultgren. I am the chairman of the Mansfield Transportation Advisory Committee and also secretary treasurer of Bike Mansfield.
Excellent. CJ?
CJ Genza, City of New Britain, kind of bike, traffic, whatever.
All of the above, right?
Right.
All right, Grace.
Hi, everyone. I'm Grace. I'm with the City of Hartford's Planning Division. I'm a new addition, but taking over part of what Sandy Fry used to do. Some of you might remember me from my previous role with the Office of Sustainability in Hartford, but glad to continue working here and meet the rest of the group.
Well, glad to have you. All right, Bob Dickinson.
Yes, I'm affiliated with South Windsor Walk and Wheelways and presently reside in Bloomfield. And my latest initiative is to try to get when traffic studies are done for developments, to actually include the words bicycle and pedestrian safety.
Excellent. All right, next on my screen, we have Bill Veronese.
Hi, yeah, Bill Veronese, a Hartford resident, member of the Complete Streets Committee, and I guess my big campaign is to try and get something done with the pedestrian approach to the Bulkley Bridge.
Oh, okay. All right, Amy.
Amy Watkins, watch for me, CT.
Thomas.
Hi, everybody. This is Thomas Regan Lefebvre, Center for Latino Progress and as a program, Transport Hub for Academy. Good to see everybody.
Good to see you. Tony?
Hello, this is Tony, working with PCCO and Transport Hartford over here at Center for Latino Progress. And excited to join.
Thanks. Mike.
Mike Cipriano, transportation planner with CROG.
Michelle.
Hi, Michelle Light with Town of South Windsor.
Eugene.
Eugene Nichols, Department of Public Health, Nutrition, Physical Activity Program, and we're currently working with Tim and CROG on a project for CDC.
And Eric Anderson.
Hi, my name is Eric Anderson. I'm the town administrator for Andover, the smallest town in the capital region.
All right, and we just had somebody join us on the phone. Do you want to introduce yourself? And I want to say it's star six to unmute.
I think that could be me. Can you hear me, Kevin Sullivan?
Oh, yes.
Yes, Kevin Sullivan with Bike Walk Wethersfield.
All right. Oh, and we just had someone join us. I'll be here in a second. I believe that's John. Do you want to introduce yourself? DiBiase?
There we go. John DiBiase, County of Manchester.
All right. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you all for joining us. I think that's everybody. Did I miss anybody? Okay. Excellent. All right. So first up, we have a public forum. If anybody from the public would like to address the committee in any way, we'll have some time later as well. But if anyone has anything that they're really wanting to say, feel free to say so now.
Hi, can I make an announcement on January 12th and on January 19th, we're going to have two work audits, one in Berlin and one in Newington, and I'll share the details in the chat.
Are those near the train stations or proposed train?
Absolutely. So the Berlin station is a Newington junction station, and we're doing that with our friend from DC Aggregate with a whole a TOD angle to it.
Excellent. Good to see. All right.
Quick announcement for BCCO. We've got a multimodal meetup this Friday in Hartford's West End, talking about winter commuting, non-car commuting, and also highlighting opportunities and challenges for city-town connections between Hartford and West Hartford to kind of follow up with the West Hartford meetup we had last month, because those sort of in those junctions and plans don't really jive. So we want to have more back and forth discussion at and near the city and town line.
Excellent. All right. Next on our agenda are the minutes from our last meeting. I would entertain a motion to approve those minutes. They're from September 14th.
I'll make a motion to approve.
I'll second.
All right. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. Excellent. The next item that we have is We're getting to the end of the year, so we have our meeting schedule. I'm just going to throw this up on my screen real quick. You can all see. So the meetings would be March 8th, June 14th, September 13th, and December 13th for 2022. Right now, we're anticipating that these will all be virtual. Hopefully, that'll change at some point, but for now, that's the thought. And for the Secretary of State, we just need to have a motion to approve these.
I'll make a motion to approve the meeting schedule for 2022.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
I'll second it, Tim.
Okay. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? All right, excellent. All right, and now we'll just jump right into some updates and news, and then we're gonna have a presentation. So let me just real quick pull up my PowerPoint. Never able to do this correctly. All right. So first, can you all see my screen correctly? I'll assume you can. All right, first item is our 2021 bike count is completed. We did 33 locations this fall with 29 volunteers. So thank you all to the volunteers. Results are currently being tabulated and inputted into our database. We hope to have some analysis in the spring. And let me see, this year we are doing the same locations that we did in 2018, I believe. So we should have some time series data there. It'll be interesting to see what effect the pandemic had. So that's coming up. I just wanted to point out for anyone who missed the Northeast Multimodal and Transit Summit, the recordings are now available. This very long link, I'll put the presentation on our website so that you can click on the link if you like. But all the recordings are now available on YouTube. It was a very good event. So congratulations to Transport Hartford and BCCO and all the folks who put this together. And as was mentioned, actually, there's the multimodal meetup on December 17th. It's at Moe's Midtown. There's a Facebook link in here to register for the event. Again, I'll put this on the website so you can click on the link. It was a very, very long link that wouldn't fit on the slide. So. So we have our CDC funded and Department of Public Health funded active transportation project. This is a statewide project that we're doing, promoting active transportation and active living under the Active People Healthy Nation initiative from CDC. And I just want to give you a little update on it. We're entering year four of our funding out of 5 years. We just finished a Killingly Industrial Park project. We did a little access and circulation plan for an industrial park in Killingly, so way out in the northeast corner of the state. We looked at bike trails and adding sidewalks and improving some transit service for the workers at that facility. Try to get some of them, not driving. We did a project that's just finishing up right now. In fact, I just got the draft of the document today. For Stamford and Meriden, they're looking at a parklet guidebook. So this is providing some rules and regulations for developing parklets and streeteries in both Stamford and Meriden. We think it'll be more generally applicable to the rest of the state as well. Could be useful to other towns. So we'll be releasing that soon. But it does provide some dimensional standards, material standards, and talks a little bit about processes for getting things approved. And then last week we did a site visit for a project we're doing in Newtown, Connecticut, the Housatonic Trail Extension Project. Currently the trail ends at the town line of Newtown. So we're looking at extending that up into the center of town. And we did a site visit for a project in Groton. This is going to be a complete streets demonstration project, a sort of tactical urbanism project in the sort of north part of town, near the downtown. Currently in the process of developing a plan for that, that will get implemented. Just checking the chat real quick. And then we're also going to be doing some bike rack procurement under the year 4 for the towns of West Hartford, South Windsor, New Milford, and New London. So we'll be procuring those bike racks for them, and also doing another round of Train the Trainer program. This is a program put on by Bike Block Connecticut, and it works with the schools to provide education for fourth grade students. So we'll actually be training the teachers to put on this, put on one of these workshops for their students. We did an event in Mansfield. Thank you, Lon, for helping to set that up. I think it was a very well received event. So we'll be doing a couple of those this year. We're hoping to work with the city of Hartford to get it to Hartford and a couple other towns. Sort of related, we're doing a project called Building Resilient and Inclusive Communities. This was some additional funding that was provided to us through the Department of Public Health. And we're working in Hartford and New Haven. In Hartford, we have about $60,000 of funding from the CDC, and that's being used to install diagonal diverters on neighborhood streets, and also to create a sort of neighborhood transportation plan in the Clay Arsenal neighborhood. They've already installed 2 diagonal diverters. You can see a picture of one of them here, one of them in Clay Arsenal and one in Frog Hollow. This is something that we've been pretty excited about, and we hope to do at least one more diagonal diverter before the project is over. And then in New Haven, I didn't put a slide about that here, but we're doing some tactical urbanism projects and curb extensions down there. We have a TOD study. This is some related to kind of a good segue from the walk audits that are being done in Berlin and Newington. We're doing a TOD roles, visioning, viability, and financial tools study. So this will be getting down to the site level of TOD sites. We're choosing one site per town that hosts a Hartford Rail or CT Fast Track station. And we're going to pick a site and look at what the zoning says, what visions say, and then really look at a market feasibility analysis. We have a real estate analysis firm under contract to really look at what is the market viability of various permutations of a development on each of those individual sites, to really get down to the viability and to hopefully be able to move those sites forward into a development scenario. We're holding our kickoff meeting tomorrow. There's a link on the CROG website if you care to join. So it's going to be an interesting study, really hoping to move forward with some additional transit-oriented development. I want to give a little update on the Link scooters in Hartford. So this launched back in April. Been very successful so far. There's a Link Up program, which is a reduced fare program for people receiving government assistance. They've had over 400 signups, and I guess they've actually been very well used by people on the Link Up program. Overall, the program has provided over 185,000 rides this season, and they just made the decision, or recently made the decision, to continue it through the winter and see how it goes. Originally, the plan was to pull the scooters for the winter, but they've decided, it's been very successful, and to see how they do with a winter program in New England. It'll be interesting to see if they get used very much, but I think that they will, because it has been a very well-received program. I want to give you another little update on a study that CROG is doing. In 2014, we had done the Metro Hartford Regional Bike Share Plan. This was a sort of feasibility study for having a bike share program for the CROG region. A lot of things have changed since then. So we're literally looking at updating that study. We're looking at some changes in the micromobility landscape that have happened since 2014. One of the big ones is the proliferation of e-scooters and also e-bikes. We also hadn't really looked that much at dockless bikes previously. The whole private bike share market wasn't really there back in 2014. So there's a lot of things that we're going to be looking at to update that study and see if there is a possibility for having a regional bike share program and what that might look like in the current market. So we had a kickoff meeting in October, and we're currently finishing up a micromobility trends report that looks at the micromobility industry and kind of look at some of the more recent trends there. So that's almost finished. We should be releasing that soon. One other study that I wanted to point out, and Bruce Donald will know a little bit about this because it involves the East Coast Greenway. So we're doing an East Coast Greenway gap study, analyzing route options for the East Coast Greenway through Bloomfield, Hartford, and East Hartford. This is really the sort of the last big gap in the East Coast Greenway in the CROG region. So we're really hoping to come up with a routing for that trail, especially in the Hartford area, where it becomes very urban and becomes very difficult to get the trail through. So we're really looking at all the different options and trying to come up with a preferred alignment for that trail to go through. Currently we're in consultant selection process, and we hope to be done with that soon and to be able to get this study underway. And then just wanted to point out one thing for the town of West Hartford. They're looking for some public feedback on a road diet trial that they're currently in the process of. So this is the West Hartford North Main Street road diet. This came out of a CROG study that back in 2016 that we had done for them. And so they're trialing it right now. And again, there's a little link there. If you just go to westhartfordct.gov road diet, there's a survey and you can provide feedback on how that's working out. If you go to the town and drive through it, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. Hopefully it can get some good feedback and they'll be able to continue with it. That is it for CROG updates.
Tim, I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
Can you tell me how a diagonal diverter works? I'm not familiar with those.
Sure. Yeah. So a diagonal diverter is really at an intersection. They place basically what they're using in Hartford is just concrete Jersey barriers across the intersection at the diagonal. And so what it basically does is it forces people to take a right turn and to not be able to drive through. So it slows cars, kind of restricts access. They have to be very carefully planned so that there's still access to, the other side of the streets by going through the network. But what it does is it discourages through traffic and it discourages speeding through those neighborhood streets. Usually they're spaced so that they still allow bicycle traffic to go through. But that's the purpose of them.
Okay, thank you.
Great question. Any other questions about anything that I reported on? Okay.
When for that North Main Street project, we kept an eye on that, went out and wrote it afterwards with a group. It was really confusing that the design included a 12-foot center turn lane and didn't actually mark bike lanes as there was room to do so. I mean, what kind of regional guidance does the town get? Because I don't think that's what was in the CROG cross-section.
Yeah, there was a few options in that study. They haven't come to us for any guidance on that. It is just a trial though. So, we'll see what happens. That is disappointing that they didn't put the bike lanes in there though. So that's certainly something that I think should go into any feedback that's provided. But yeah, we'd love to see the bike lanes go in there, especially when it's made permanent.
I guess the difference is temporary versus permanent is moving curbs, and that's like a 10, 15, 20 year sort of time frame. So it went like temporary as paint and repaving is what you're going to have there for quite a while.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what the decision on not putting in the bike lanes was, but that is very unfortunate.
It is very unfortunate. I'm going to put a link in the chat to some of the comments and recommendations we have. One is the overly wide center turn lane is preventing that demo project from having marked bike lanes of appropriate width for that high speed corridor. The other is that the project doesn't actually connect to the nearby destinations being the West Hartford Center and Bishop's Corner. So you're kind of just, if you're a youth or a non-confident bike rider that doesn't feel safe taking the lane, you kind of get ditched right there at your actual destinations that you would want to bike to. A couple things on that project. It's better than it was, but they didn't really, it's like a left out the most important bits.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know they had some constraints as well, working with the budget that they had and with the constraints of what they were able to move and rearrange. But yeah, those are all great points. And I would encourage everyone to provide some feedback on that as well. Any other questions or comments on any of the updates that I gave? Okay. So with that, we have Amy Watkins here from Watch for Me CT, and she was going to give us a little presentation on some of the new head safety laws that went into effect recently.
Yes. Hi, everybody. Let me pull my screen up. So, Tim asked me to do this kind of overview, which I'm happy to do with the caveat that I'm not a legal analyst or expert. So I'm going to kind of do some bare minimum of what I know about the law. But if anyone else has any more clarification or things they want to add, feel free. Again, I'm in no means an expert on the law. But so what started out as House Bill 5429 and is now Public Act, having been signed into law and effective October 1st, is this act concerning pedestrian safety, Vision Zero Council, speed limits in municipalities, fines and charges for violations, and the Greenways commemorative account. So among the things that it did, it sought to do a little bit more than this, but things like the automated enforcement was taken out. So, but these are things that are in there. That is the requiring motorists to grant the right of way to anybody who indicates that they want to cross, increasing some fees and sending those for traffic violations and sending that money back to the municipalities, creating a dooring law, joining 40 plus other states, allowing local traffic authorities to establish speed limits and pedestrian safety zones, and it establishes the Greenways commemorative account, which Bruce could talk about if anyone has questions about. I'm also going to put in the chat, just so everyone has it, you can actually read the bill there if you want to. So to go into a little bit more, okay, detail, what is the new yielding language mean? So our law up until then, and I think it was changed in 2007, when people had to be in the crosswalk in order for the car to have to yield. And that's unsafe for a number of reasons. So now the law expands that. So if somebody is still on the sidewalk, but they indicate that they want to cross, they're not required anymore to be stepping into the crosswalk. I think at one point we were hoping it was going to make us a stop state instead of a yield state, but that did not, it's not something that happened. So we're still a yield state, which means that we always use drivers must yield instead of drivers must stop. Again, we were kind of hoping that was going to change, but that didn't change. So now if a person is at an uncontrolled crosswalk, which means there's already, if there's a ped head and a walk, don't walk sign, obviously that takes precedence. So this is places that don't have that. And if you just wave and indicate, and yes, that doesn't mean somebody is going to stop. We have, I get a lot of people, especially in the general community who have said, does this mean I can just, I just wave and walk out? And what if, you know, someone doesn't stop? Well, so I tell people that you still have to make sure that you're seen and that people are stopping, because as we know, people don't always stop. So it is, it just increases the chances, the opportunities you have to request that that crossing, and hopefully people will see and stop. But that's a separate enforcement issue and behavior issue, I guess. But so, and also it has to be at a crosswalk, marked or unmarked. It's not a middle of the road, anywhere you feel like raising your hand and crossing. It's people won't need to be slamming on their brakes as they drive down a road with no crosswalks. The other part is, oh, here's the actual language. So it still includes, if you're in the crosswalk, people should yield, that's still there. The bold is the additional part. If you step to the curb at the entrance and you indicate that you want to cross, which is moving any of these things that they list, and it's there's a fine for people who don't stop. The Doering Law, that is basically, it's any kind of moving traffic that includes bicycles, anybody that, walking, anybody that is moving along on the side of the road, you cannot open your car door into their path or leave your car door open for longer than it's needed to unload and load people. So there's that. And is there any other part? No, that's it. That's pretty much it. So it's pretty, I mean, it is kind of basic. I mean, when you think about it, there's not really that much of a change. I mean, it does get Doering on the books, which is great. And it does get out that requirement that people have to step into the crosswalk, but it's, and hopefully it will increase the communication between drivers and pedestrians. But we still have a long way to go, but, and I can't answer any why questions, why some things were left in and were or out. And I also can't tell you how well it'll be enforced, because that's not up to me and I don't know, and that's an existing problem. So I can just tell you what I know about the law and hopefully help you understand what the changes mean, but I can't really do any whys or hows. So
it's always dangerous to try to interpretate the why of any state legislation.
Right. The only why I can answer is the benefit of taking out that having to step into the crosswalk. It's just a safer thing. When I first started this position, I had met with some people who had visual disabilities, and they expressed right off the bat that it was a problem if they, especially they have their seeing eye dog and themselves, and it's sometimes it's just dangerous to make somebody have to step into the road. So we get rid of that. That's a good thing to get rid of, that people can also just be on the side of the road. That's the only why that I'll venture is a safety improvement. But yeah, it's a drop in the bucket, but it does bring us a little bit closer.
Well, thank you. Also, we have a couple of questions. Renata?
Yes, Amy, can you, this, these are laws that are currently passed. Like this is a law, yes, that currently exists, right?
Yes.
What is being done, if anything, if you know, to educate like a general population of these new laws now?
So there is a DOT funded campaign called the Pedestrian Rules. And I'll put that in the chat in a second, or if someone else wants to. But it had two phases. So Watch For Me helped a little bit, and it does, the website does live as an extension of the Watch For Me website. But the first phase was, you know, these laws are coming, pedestrian, you'll be able to stop traffic with a wave of your hand kind of thing. So it was letting people know this was coming. And now it has, it's three characters, the waver, the looker, and the watcher, or something like that. And basically it's saying, it's highlighting the three major activities. One is the pedestrian indicating, that they, you know, from the sidewalk. The next is the driver looking to see if anybody is indicating they want to cross. And then the third is the person who is looking to open his car door and is checking behind him. So there is a website that includes, and there's billboards and there's some digital placement. Again, it's called the Pedestrian Rules. I think there's some radio, some TV, but again, that's all something that the DOT is controlling, although I got to have a little bit of input into the creation of that campaign, but it's mostly DOT driven. and yes, that's what I know about how they're reaching out to people with that now. I think Jerry, I see Jerry's comment that, yeah, that would be great if they were putting that into driver's ed. There's quite a few things they need to be adding to driver's ed that they don't necessarily teach, like what are sharrows and what are, yield lines. And when I went to some driving schools, I had instructors who didn't know what those things were. So I think that, and I did a little outreach to driving instructors, but it's a huge lift. But yeah, that's a good point for sure. Bob, you have a question, Bob? Are you muted? You're muted.
Yes, I really recently saw in the paper that they were going to be setting up speed cameras in construction zones after the first of the year. And I was wondering, like, and they mentioned giving fines, and I was just wondering what does the law call out for fines? Because I'm very much opposed to very high fines, and I think much more effective that enforcement be that if you get three or five of them, then you lose your license.
Yeah, I don't know. So this bill, when it was proposed, it did have it had a part for a pilot in work zones and a pilot in school zones. And I'm pretty sure that when you read the actual text of the Public Act, those things are not in there. But that said, they have announced pilots in other, like that they're doing the pilot. So it's not in this
Public Act. It's in the budget. It's in the budget implementer. They snuck construction zone camera enforcement into that.
Okay, thank you. So yeah, so they tried to get it through on this one. It didn't work, but they managed to get it through elsewhere. Thanks for that clarification. But I don't know what the fines will be. I believe that the party line is that they shouldn't be too big, but I don't know what the final decision is.
If I can just add this here on the for the budget implementer for the work zone. It's just for highways. It's a DOT pilot on highways and only for 15 miles per hour above the speed limit. And it's a warning for the first violation and $75 for the second violation and $150 for the third violation. And as you may be aware, the state union police came heavily against it. It was an illegal act, and they were going to help drivers to evade any kind of fines.
That's interesting. The article, there was an article in The Current that said the fines could be up to $200, but it didn't really give any additional information. But that's good to have. Were there any other questions or comments on the new pedestrian laws?
I suppose just quickly that the restoration of the Greenway's license plate account, which is what that last thing was, is going to be administered through DEEP and through the Connecticut Greenways Council, which I'm chairman of. And as a practical matter, is going to become what it used to be 20 some odd years ago, before the legislature stole all the money from the license plates, back to some sort of small grant program. And I'm talking to DOT, a DEEP right now about the nuts and bolts of how we're going to do that. So just stay tuned, but that should be happening. My understanding is those funds are going to be swept twice a year out of DMV. So, and I have no idea what it's going to come out to. There aren't a ton of people buying Greenways plates, mostly because they all know that it just goes to the general fund and not to the Greenways. So one of the things that we are talking about is some sort of public information something, you know, whether it's just trifolds or whatever it's going to be, to get the word out that, in fact, those monies are going back to Connecticut Greenways again.
Yeah, it's great to have the money going back into the account where it's supposed to go. Glad they finally did that. And we had a question in the chat from Thomas. What are the municipal plans to implement HB 5429? That I'm not sure about. I don't know if anyone has any insight into that, anyone from any of the towns.
Yeah. I mean, from a Hartford standpoint, we've got a every other month, I think, Complete Streets meeting. Grace is on. I'm sure that 5429 will be coming up. And we have HPD, the police department, traffic enforcement, attending that meeting. So that helps get it disseminated. So I don't think we've had that in-depth discussion yet, but it's likely to come up in one of our meetings early next year. I don't know if Grace has any other thoughts.
Hey, Tony, that's a good point. And I don't have anything off the top of my head, but I think it's a good point that there are a couple different public safety and complete streets intersections here. So adding it to the list.
Okay.
Relative to 5429, you know, being legislation with enforceable parts of it, including that budget implementer that's got the interstate camera enforcement. One thing we noticed in our last Hartford Complete Streets meeting, and I just was curious if other towns were seeing this as well, our Hartford traffic enforcement counts are way down. We noticed in 2018, when we started looking at this, that Hartford's traffic enforcement rate was, depending on what year, 25 to 50% of the state average per capita. And then we had a really deadly year in 2018, if folks remember, where the city had the same number of traffic crash fatalities as homicide victims. That year they started ramping the traffic stop rate up to get closer to that state average. I think we got probably around to like 75% of the state average per capita in 2019, but we're back down again to pre-2018 traffic stop levels, at least in the city of Hartford. I've not looked at those numbers for other cities and surrounding towns in the region, but it's not the only tool we've got. Clearly, it's sometimes not even the most effective tool we've got for reducing crash carnage, especially for vulnerable users. But it's something we keep an eye on. So noticing that traffic stop rate is, you know, continued to fall. It's lower this year than it was in 2020 when we had kind of the working excuse of the pandemic.
Yeah, there was a piece, and I think it was in the Current, about state highway enforcement, and that traffic stops are way down amongst the state patrollers as well. They were speculating on why that was. I guess the police unions think it has to do with low morale.
It has to do with sandbagging.
It looks like it is sort of a statewide issue that they're seeing, at least with the state patrol. Are any other municipalities experiencing low stop rates or aware of that?
This is Grace. I think it's interesting to kind of bring this up. It also bears the question in mind of, you know, how the percentage of people that have returned back to work or continuing to work remote or hybrid. I know that still we're still lower than we were at last year to date. So it's a good point that it's not, you know, just one thing, but it'd be interesting to see some correlating factors.
Bill, you have your hand up.
I had a question. Does anyone feel they understand the 5429 section on changing speed limits? before Sandy left Hartford's Complete Streets Committee, we had put together a list of a number of streets that we were hoping to lower to 25 miles per hour. But I noticed there is a section in here that now says you need an engineering study to make changes. Does anybody understand this?
I can, because I saw a couple versions of that bill. And if the first version that came as in the proposed bill was the city can and group a bunch of streets together of like streets and have an application that changes the speed limit no more than 15 miles per hour to I think no lower than 20 miles per hour. And it was a public meeting was the recommendation in that first draft, where they had a local public meeting and the local traffic authority being the instigator, and then sending that to OSTA at DOT. The second version that made it into the final bill looks like a transportation engineer rewrote it.
Right,
Like a CTDOT OSTA transportation engineer rewrote it. And they basically, it looks like they copy pasted the previous process and just said the municipality now has more power, but it kind of kept all the paperwork that makes it really hard.
Well, not only the paperwork, I'm just curious if you follow these practices, will you decide, oh, no, this road should be 35 instead of 25?
Yeah, the same calculator they use recommends 85th percentile. They haven't changed that method that the transportation engineers would have to apply or document engineering judgment that takes them away from that standard. So it's portion of the bill got a lot of lip service as a great municipal, return to municipal power for these local streets. But reading through it, I was not happy. It looks like they kept it very.
Yeah. Okay. It's
transportation engineer speak.
Thanks.
I would say the last draft that I had looked at had talked about the changes allowing the towns to take over and through the traffic authority set speed limits, but a study was always needed. It was needed before. You still really need to do a study. Arbitrarily setting speed limits doesn't really help anybody, especially the vulnerable people who rely on the signs and things that go along with it. And so, certain towns like New Haven or cities like New Haven have always wanted to set their own speed limits, and it kind of does. Last draft I saw enables them to finally do what they need to do. But you get somebody, a professional, to do a study and come up with recommendations, and they sign off and stamp it, then those are the results that you can work with. Some folks are more conservative than others.
I guess the concern is we have 50 or 60 streets, and in general, we'd be just taking all those 30 mile an hour streets to 25. And now we have to do an individual study on every one.
I guess part of it revolves around, you set the speed limit at 25, what mechanisms are you using to kind of help, control the speeds of the drivers? The signs don't do anything. That's been evident for a long time. It needs other factors like, geometric changes, some of the stuff that we talked about and saw in the presentation earlier. You need to, move the markings around a little bit. It can't just be the signs. I think that's kind of the issue. And, you can set it all at 25, but it's not going to change anything. I've seen that the whole time I've been doing this. So
We've got really confusing signs. We have signs at the Hartford City line that say 25 unless otherwise signed. They put those up in early 2000, and then OSTA never approved it. So we have a total hot mess. We just can't even make it uniform with staffing and budget restrictions. We're doing tons of stuff to do physical traffic calming. I think we have over 200 speed humps on neighborhood streets, so the mechanisms are in place for physical traffic calming on a lot of these streets. We can't get the signs. We can't get the paperwork through.
Renata, did you have another question?
Yes. So just kind of to tie into what Bob said in the chat, with regards to planning proposals, and I'm kind of curious to hear from John and from Michelle if they have the same experience. But not only that the commissions not focus on bike, pedestrian like safety in the analysis, and it's not just the developers, like they don't come up with studies because generally the commissions, the land use agencies, don't make that mandatory under the regs, right? So it's at some level it has been this decided that it's not a priority. But to top that, we're also hearing this notion of how just so much better the driving has become. Supposedly after pandemic, anecdotally, everybody's complaining how people are speeding, running red lights, the stop signs, all of that. So I'm just kind of wondering, is this happening elsewhere, which I suspect it is? And then if that's the case, what as a group should we do to push for the changes, perhaps legislative changes, that mandate zoning changes that then mandate that these studies are incorporated with applications and that the commissions must consider them?
A good question. I don't know, does anybody have any thoughts on adding that to land use regulations?
I'll comment a little bit on it. It does, the process, at least here in Manchester, does rely heavily on the commissioners and their background and their knowledge to ask questions during the process, whether there's a hearing or the discussions with the developer. I know from an engineering perspective, the town's adopted a complete streets policy. That's first step. If your town doesn't have one, I strongly recommend you look into working towards adopting one. As far as engineering goes, I can only do so much. A lot of this is private property, and so there's only so many things I can ask of and require on private property. But during our technical reviews on behalf of the Planning and Zoning Commission, in the spirit of our complete streets policy, I do ask some simple questions sometimes. You're building a new pharmacy off a main road, you've got a parking lot, you've got front doors, you got a little bit of sidewalk there. But a lot of times the easy thing that seems to be overlooked is they don't really connect it to our sidewalk network out in the public area. So it's an easy question to ask during a technical review, making sure the utility connections are good, the driveway's just back, and then say, hey, how do pedestrians get into your site? How do you tie in? Where's your connection point? Are you forcing them to walk in the driveway where there's conflicts with vehicular traffic? And that's an easy way to kind of skew the answer towards what you want, which is show a little bit of sidewalk out there, connect the dots. And so,
it's an easy question to ask. Yes, John, it's an easy question to ask, but if it's not in your regulations, you can't require it, which is kind of...
We actually have it regarding regulations. That
we are all asking.
We do have them in our regulations in South Windsor. We adopted a pedestrian and bicycle section. And so it actually Neil Pade had adopted something similar in Canton that we kind of used as a model. And it really basically requires the developer to tell us how they're getting from the sidewalk to their front door. They can, a sidewalk linkage can be required. It does require bicycle provisions if you're over a certain square footage. So I'd be glad to share that with anybody. It's a good starting point. It starts the dialogue with every developer. How are you addressing the pedestrian and the bicyclist? So
my thought on that was that when we're doing a new development, maybe there's no sidewalks, no side paths there. That's inadequate for bicycles and pedestrians as is. But when you put in the new development, you have more traffic. So at least the State Commission should address that when they review any traffic study. And I think if they come out and say pedestrian safety will be further diminished, then it would be an incentive to for the developer to put side paths or sidewalks at least in front of their development. And of course, I always like to look at Windsor, and they actually have it in their zoning planning regulations that they all developments will put in a sidewalk or side path.
Eric?
Yeah, so the town of Andover did the same thing about 5 years ago when I chaired Planning and Zoning Commission. We changed our parking regulations to decrease the number of parking spots that are required at commercial venues based on some real data. And at the same time, we put in a requirement that all new businesses will have a bike rack and will make accommodations for pedestrian and cycling connections to the businesses, especially if it's going to be a mixed use development. So we put that straight into the regs. And we did that after we wrote a complete streets plan that kind of laid out how the town was going to go overall, and then kind of required that everything coming in commercial has to deal with that. Now, we have no commercial growth in town, so there hasn't been one actually added, but the regulations are in place for it. And I think that's kind of a good first step.
That's great. You know, I'm thinking maybe one thing that's, that CROG could do is we do have a regional planning commission that's made up of representatives from each of the planning and zoning boards in all of our towns. And I'm wondering if we could maybe it'd be helpful for us to put together a presentation on, you know, including complete streets and pedestrian bike ped accommodations in, you know, land use codes and have some examples and some best practices to kind of, you know, at least educate land use commissioners on, you know, what they can do to really encourage better accommodations and developments. Seems like that might be a helpful addition. All right. Any other questions or comments? That was a really good discussion.
All right. I would just suggest, you know, make a note to having a master plan. You know, a general planning plan is good, but sometimes a master plan with a map of here's where the sidewalk's going to go, which is something we have. Here's where the bike lanes are going to go, something I don't currently have. I think goes a long way because I know developers never want to do piecemeal stuff. They're like, oh, there's nothing to connect to. But sometimes piecemeal is the way you got to go. And that makes it easier to kind of fill in the gaps. So, you know, if you have a map you could point to, it says, hey, there's supposed to be a sidewalk here. It's a lot easier to kind of compel a developer to make those connections and to fill in their part of the gap at a minimum. So I think that's a great idea. So thanks for that.
I just might add that we currently have a lawsuit right now where we required a sidewalk as part of a zone change general plan on Sullivan Ave. And the developer sued us specifically over that requirement. And it's working its way through the courts right now. So I'll report back and let you know if there's any precedent setting law that we can make.
One thing we've done to give developers flexibility in Hartford is, you know, some places it just doesn't make sense to have a sidewalk or another type of accommodation. They have an option in the zoning to pay into the complete streets budget so that other projects that are more, you know, connected or important can move forward. So if a town wants to look at that as a as something, as a sidewalk alternative, that's something we've found beneficial. Grace probably knows more about it and how many projects have made payments versus just done what's in zoning.
I think hopping into this role fairly recently, my understanding there's been maybe one payment this year, but again, I'd have to double check since I'm relatively new to the role. This fiscal year, I should clarify.
All right. I think now we'll move into our sort of town updates and also organizational updates. Sorry, I've got some sirens coming by here. We're very close to a firehouse, so get a lot of sirens here. I think we'll start just where I see people on the screen. Martha, do you have any updates from Riverfront?
Sure. We have a lot going on. I won't take too much time, but just since we haven't been here, I will just say that we were very pleased this year that the Hartford to Windsor Riverwalk, which is in design and heading quickly towards permitting and construction, hopefully beginning in 2022, was actually named the Joe Marfuji Riverwalk by the city of Hartford. And this is gonna be 2.5 miles extending Riverside Park out from north of our boathouse all the way to the Windsor Town Line. I think we're doing a lot of work right now to transform that from, you know, something that just is point A to point B to really making it a destination in and of itself. Riverfront is raising about, we're aiming to raise at least $750,000 to add amenities to the trail, including 4 to 5 pocket parks along the way is what we call them. They're really view sheds to the river, where there'll be art installed and other amenities so that it's really something that is gonna be, it's a great regional connection to Windsor and something that is going to drive, I think will be a great tourist attraction for Hartford and for the region, as well as being a great transportation, a safe transportation route, a multimodal transportation route. Part of that trail goes up across 60 acres of land that we actually have purchased in the north end of Hartford and south end of Windsor, which we also, that the Marfuji Riverwalk will go across it and connect into Windsor. We are actually developing a new park in that area. And that's gonna be our first connection to Windsor. We received a DOT community connectivity grant for the trail that goes to Windsor. And we've actually also gotten funding from the EPA and DCD for cleaning up that park. So that's rolling right along, and we're excited about that. And then just the other thing I'll mention is we're very excited about a new partnership with the town of Weathersfield. Kevin Sullivan's been a partner in this, and Grace Yee and Hartford is partnering. We put forward a proposal for the Connecticut, for the Rec Trail Grants, the Deep Rec Trail Grants, to do a feasibility study of connecting Hartford south to Weathersfield and to hopefully have a riverfront path. So it's just the first step that would connect us to, connect us south to Weathersfield and to the Putnam Bridge and hopefully onto eventually onto Rocky Hill as well. But it's that necessary first step that's gonna, I think, could create ultimately something like 16 miles of riverfront trails. So suddenly we have like the Cape Cod Rail Trail happening here, which we're excited about. Was there a question about?
It looks like there's a question about if there's a specific plan to connect the new park.
Yeah, at the border with Windsor, where the gates are now. Is so there a plan to have a back pass to Great Families, for you and Grace, and to Kinney Park?
So the entrance of our park is just to the east of Kinney Park, and so you would come out and actually, as part of an upgrade Amtrak did to the trails right outside the gate of our park, they did some pedestrian, they did some upgrades to that crossing. And so that is, that's already done, and there's new sidewalks in the area. More needs to be done though, and it's something we've actually had conversations with the National Park Service wants to look at that area as well to see if there's something more. They have some interest in doing some development there. We've had conversations with folks in Hartford, folks in Windsor about what we can do to make that a better connection. It's going to be incredibly important to us to make sure that people can get into the park safely, comfortably, feel welcome into the park. So
Do you have any
just by car? We want people walking and biking in from that entrance.
That's great. And do you have any idea of when the gates are going to be reopened? Because now it's
been, no. Yeah, I know. So I know this is. So we we did gate the entrance to the park, and it's an important step as part of our cleanup. There was a ton of illegal dumping that was happening there. And so just we've removed, literally tons of garbage from the property. And so until we remediate the property, it would be unwise to let folks in, because suddenly somebody comes and dumps something and we have a whole new, environmental study to do. So we really have to safeguard the property, but we are looking to open it up hopefully in 2022. And this will involve creating stream crossings across Decker's Brook and Meadow Brook, and connecting it all the way, connecting right to the Windsor Trail system too, the Windsor River Walk.
Yeah, right now you have to, don't tell anyone, trespass on railroad property. Don't get hit by a train, sucks.
I mean, we're working as quickly as possible to I don't even want to call it return, because there was no public access there. This was private property. And so we are creating public access to the riverfront in that spot, and to a portion of Windsor Meadow State Park that was previously inaccessible because of Decker's Brook, and it was surrounded by private land and water. So we're getting there.
Bill, did you have a question?
Yeah. Two questions related to going south. Martha, one of them I would think you'd have some ideas on is what kind of route is being considered going south towards Weathersfield?
So that's what the study is to look at. I mean, the routes being contemplated include going along the river in Hartford, and then finding a way through the flood control system as you come into Weathersfield. And then certainly portions of it will be on the road, both in Hartford, potentially in Hartford, and certainly in Weathersfield. And that speaks to, I think Tony said, you want to get someplace, you want to bring people to a location, right? And so part of what will drive this is bringing folks right into the heart of Old Weathersfield. I actually live in Weathersfield, and so bringing people into the heart of Old Weathersfield, and then creating that connection to the Putnam Bridge is going to be important as that comes online, and that's going to allow us connection over to Glastonbury and with the Goodwin Trails. We will contemplate being able to go somewhat along the river, along the cove in Weathersfield, and seeing if it can utilize that path. And then how far we can go south in Weathersfield into the meadows too.
Yeah, the second question really is, does anyone know the status of the Putnam Bridge pedestrian bike connection? Last I'd heard, everything was approved, but it's not obvious that anything's going on yet.
Last I knew, talking to DOT, it's approved and mostly funded. which is a classic term for it's not fully funded. And that's the last I knew. I do know that they really want to put both ends, the western end definitely in construction next year, for sure. But the eastern end, I'm still not sure about. So the answer is, it is unclear.
Is it designed? Bruce?
Yeah, it's all designed.
Yeah.
So are we in good position with all this money coming?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, among other things, in calendar 22, we're going to get flooded with new federal money. There's going to be money. I don't think that's a problem. I think the problem is getting warm bodies to program the money. I think that's going to be the issue at DOT. But that's a subject for another day.
All right. Thank you.
Excellent. All right. Going to the next person on my screen. Was that all, Martha? Yeah. Going to the next person on my screen. Bruce, you're next.
Lots of things, as you can imagine. I haven't presented to this august board in quite some time, and I apologize. But I will say a couple of things, one of which is that the Connecticut Rec Trails funding awards are being parsed. We had a five-hour meeting about 10 days ago or so to start off that process. All of the applications have been awarded points, a score, based on a matrix that we've been working on for years and years. You should all be aware that we got 63 project applications totaling $22 million for less than $3 million that we've got to give out. So this is going to be a real problem for us. and so, you know, we will see. But, you know, of the highly ranked projects, of those 63, I'm looking at it right now, there's about 15. So, you know, we will do our best. But it gives you, there's two things to draw from this, one of which is we still aren't providing enough money for project implementation, for feasibility, design, initial engineering. That's still a problem in the state, getting projects in the pipeline. Because we do know there's going to be more federal money for project construction, but getting projects moving in the state has always been a problem and remains a problem. And the fact that we've got folks clamoring to the tune of $22 million for what amounts to probably two and a half after DEEP takes their cut, that's a problem. So I just wanted to let you know that cheery thing. Obviously, you know, we will, I think sometime in February, announce those grants. We're going to meet a couple of more times in January. So we will let you know about those. Yeah, I could go into more detail about projects, but I don't think we have time. But if anybody has any questions, you know where to find me, obviously.
Thank you. Next on my screen, I have Nathaniel.
I haven't been working for the town of Canton very long, since November, actually. So I don't have very much to add, just because I'm still learning the job in the town.
Bob, you have anything? You're muted.
Oh, I didn't have anything special, just what I've noted on the chat.
Okay, excellent. Bill, you're next on my screen. Do you have anything to add? Any updates?
No updates. Martha, this might connect with Riverfront in some sense. DOT is looking at the Bulkley Bridge pedestrian approach. And if you could picture that on the Hartford side, it's really hard to access it, but that would also be great if there was some way in whatever they come up with, you could get it connected into the park. Not sure how to do that. But.
I've seen a sketch for, you know, an aluminum ramp coming down from the sidewalk on the Hartford side of the riverfront. And I think it's been in some of the, you know, conceptual drawings. But yeah, that Buckley Bridge is fantastically terrible for bike ped access. It crosses an entrance or exit ramp on both sides, neither of them with a crosswalk or traffic control.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of sketches. Tony's exactly right. And it is ugly over there. It's not good.
Doesn't have to be ugly.
No, that's true. That is true.
That is one of the most beautiful bridges in our city, and then we ruined it with an interstate.
And it's only one of three. I mean, it's one of three, I should say. That's it to get across the river. So
I don't disagree.
Thank you. That's all. That's all I have.
Talking with bridges, and is there any plans for rehabilitating a little bit the railway bridge, which goes across the riverfront, up to East Hartford, which is very used legally or illegally by many pedestrians and cyclists, and wonder if there are any plans here to strengthen or to secure this connection.
I haven't heard of anything, Thomas.
Yeah, neither have I.
Is it? I wonder if it's of Hartford 400 must be contemplating. I mean, they're, you know, this becomes part of all of that vision too.
They are, but don't forget, you know, the Griffin line is still in play, and there's a lot there's a lot of moving parts to that. But I've heard nothing about the bridge itself.
Yeah, I do recall in the Hartford 400 concept plan there being a new pedestrian bridge put in.
Yeah, the busy half of all don't have any funding for that project. So.
Yeah. So that's an issue.
So, and just to come back once, sorry, in the discussion with Bruce about the federal money, in the I'm more not pessimistic, but in terms of talking with DOT, what we're hearing is that they say, oh, we're just getting a bit of increase in funding in our programs. They've been very cautious in saying that we're going to be flooded with money and we're going to fund everything and so on and so on. On the contrary, the message that you've been getting has been pretty, not very reassuring to us, which is not the same discourse we've been hearing from DEEP, which has been very enthusiastic and so on about the infrastructure federal money. We're meeting with the DOT in January to discuss that specifically.
Let me see, where do I begin with that? So there's a couple of things going on, one of which is, and by the way, this is just money that's passed, right? This is not talking about anything that hasn't passed. Federal TAP money, Transportation Enhancement Act money, will rise about 70% going to Connecticut. So that is new. There will be other programmatic amounts of money in various pots that could go to bike ped. Here's the problem. In the enabling legislation, there was no demands set that they had to go to bike ped. So we are unsure at this time about how much money that is, to be perfectly blunt. Will there be more money in the transportation transportation writ large? Yes, there will be a lot more money. Question is where it goes. I'm sorry, I can't be more. I can't give you more information, but we just don't know.
It keeps changing.
All right. Actually, next on my screen, Thomas, do you have any updates?
We just spoke a lot. So we have, you know, just saying we have two. Work credit coming up in January. But in terms of our advocacy, we want to focus on, of course, on Hartford, and one point that we really want to work on is on the updating of the municipal code, especially on the protection of pedestrians whenever there are sidewalk walks. At the moment, there is no protection whatsoever. Pedestrians are moved around and go on the road, and this is actually completely unacceptable. So we are working on that. Our key focus on kind of the legislative is on emissions, and you may be aware that the Transportation and Climate Initiative didn't go through, and so we're trying to salvage some of the elements there, and we are going to focus on the passing of the medium and heavy duty truck bill, and focus on the equity element on the regional project of this initiative. We want to see more monitoring of emissions, especially on school buses. We don't have much information from DMV on that, but we see that it's not really acceptable. The way it is. We are pushing for rebate on e-bikes. There's a cheaper meeting on Thursday, and that's something that we want to add to our bucket list for moving forward. And there's a few other things, but you know, we work in a coalition of environment and transportation advocates, and we are going to keep pushing for transitioning to more transportation, which are sustainable, environmentally sustainable, equitable, and safe for all the users.
Thank you. Eric, do you have anything from Andover?
Sure, real quick. We have work begun on our connectivity grant project, which will provide connectivity across Route 6. The town is bisected by a fairly highly trafficked road, and there's really only one safe crossing. So we're in the process of upgrading that, making a new trailhead for the rail trail. And then we have a combined grant in with Coventry to DEP to come up with a new walking trail in the Nathan Hale State Forest along some old roadbed that the town of Coventry owns, and then connecting through Andover on an on-rail section. And then that will dovetail into a separate application the town made for a feasibility study to provide access from the rail trail up through Route 16 to kind of the center of the town where the school is. So some stuff in planning stage, some stuff in construction stage. So for a little town, we're doing okay. That's it.
Excellent. All right, John, what do you have from Manchester?
Just a couple little things. Actually, you know, I make a quick pitch. Every time we talk about the Bulkley Bridge, I always like to point out that I'd like to see the interstate taken off the bridge, it returned to local traffic. That leaves room for CT Fast Track East, room for bikes and peds, a little bit of room for cars, of course. And I think it would better reconnect Hartford East Hartford. That's just me.
We would all love that.
It was historically a great like boardwalk, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Boulevard. Yeah. It was a boulevard design.
And you can see, as you're coming over the bridge going towards East Hartford, you can see, Governor's Boulevard or something, where like, you know, just you could just wiggle things around, even fix Route 2 and bring 2 around or something. I've seen a couple of concepts. There's one or two I thought were really good, but we're back to studying it. So just cross our fingers. And then Bruce mentioned something many discussion topics back that I would just say to Tim, any more programs CROG could provide in the same framework of LOTSIP as far as, you know, other funding opportunities would be awesome. Anything where we don't have to go through DOT, but we can go through you guys is awesome. I love LOTSIP. I wish there was one for maybe some more specific types of work, even bike bed stuff specifically. So we can cut those out and apply for our other projects under LOTSIP instead. But we do both and it's been working great. Kevin, unfortunately, just signed off. He had a question going further back. We have a working group in Manchester that is looking at our downtown area. I don't really have anything I want to share right this second because it's going to come up at the board meeting next month, but we do have an infrastructure project that has a heavy bike ped complete streets component aspect to it, even though road and signal is more of a driving need. So hopefully next quarter, I'll have something I can share that I think is pretty exciting. So other than that, I've still got supply issues. I'm waiting for RFP equipment to come in so I can finish doing some crossing upgrades that we do at Main Street downtown and actually one further south on South Main Street in a rural area. Just did get a separate different shipment. They're orange. I need black, but we got some RFPs for some standalone public works installations that we're going to be identifying locations for and installing next year. Most of our projects are winding down. We've got some grant applications in. I think we're working on that final rails to trails senior line conversion along with part of the state acquiring part of the railroad there and connecting to the Hot Brook Trail. So still waiting for final details of that, I guess, to be sorted out. And then looking forward to hopefully getting approved and getting the land and being able to make that final connection. Beyond that, just starting to really gear up and move heavy on new designs for next year. So Nothing too specific at this moment, but I'm sure I'll have some more next quarter. So I think that's all I got, unless somebody's got questions for me. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, CJ, next on my screen.
Everybody. So not too much to report now, but we did finish our community connectivity project, which installed buffer bike lanes on Allegrasso Boulevard adjacent to Central CCSU. Ironically, a lot of resistance from them, but basically told us our road, we're doing it. And that success of that already, we submitted for a Rec Trails grant, Bruce, for installing a trail up there adjacent to campus going into Newington, connecting to Fast Track, which would then lead into our Stanley bike trails and through our parks, which are funded starting construction spring. Cool system there. So it's been held up, you know, DOT review, you know, everybody's complaint, held our project up there. But then we have our Beeline Trail, which is our gap closure study extension into New Britain. Design three phases fully funded, construction phases, two phases funded. So we're getting to Plainville town lines. We need to put the pressure on them, get that connected into the East Coast Greenway, build a real significant trail system through the city. As far as Bike New Britain goes, focus, you know, they've been maintaining their bike shop on semi-regular hours, slowing down, but really focusing on bike education again. Looking to do the TS 101 courses in the spring, get a series of those going through some grants we had locally. Really push that. So they're busy doing a good job. That's it.
Excellent. Thank you. Grace, what's going on in Hartford?
We've just had a complete streets meeting yesterday, and a lot of the updates that were shared early on today, whether it was Riverfront with their work or CROG with their various studies, you know, also came up. Outside of that, though, a few interesting things that are happening on the transportation side. If you haven't heard already, Hartford is launching an open streets initiative where we close our streets to become car free and open it up to bikes, scooters, pedestrians, have activity hubs, and etc. We have a tentative start date of May 22nd, and it'll be followed by one Sunday a month for about 6 months. So we're really excited about that. There'll be various different routes, but all of them will connect through Main Street, but some of them will go east to west and others north to south. So really exciting to have that happen. Separately, we have, of course, a parking study, small area plans and neighborhood plannings going on in the interim or getting launched at the moment. Outside of that, North Main Street is currently in design phase that will connect up and closer to Windsor. So there's potentially some room for connection there. Another project that we're working on is the South Branch Park River Trail that's currently in the design process as well. And you know, that's from Nyland to Newfield Street. And it was really great to actually go to the multimodal meetup that Tony had mentioned, because West Hartford advocates were there, as well as the planners there too, Jim Brennan. Shout out to him. He's doing great work on the Trout Brook River Trail, and eventually maybe we'll have something to connect there between us and the South Trout Brook and the South Branch. Scooter share, I think, you know, Tim shared the highlights. Also wanted to note that we have new scooter corrals in downtown. It's a pretty limited number at this point because we had to work with what we could to get in the season, but we're excited to get the second batch started in the spring as well. So a quick note that, you know, in terms of scooter share, they will be pulled during inclement weather. That's been happening previously during heavy storms. Same likewise for winter operations as well. So I think that, you know, we have a lot of, you know, projects here and there that are going on, whether it's striping and Asylum Hill or et cetera. But overall, you know, a lot of hodgepodge of different projects going on.
Great, thank you. A lot of stuff going on. Amy, anything from Watch from ECD?
Not too much. I know we're getting to the end of our time here. I don't have anything, you know, groundbreaking, except that we've gotten some additional funding to run a couple of our impaired driving things. So we partnered with some other agencies to do an anti-drunk driving campaign that is aimed at the highest group of offenders, which is men 18 to 35. And then with a small side campaign that is the next rising numbered group, which is men a little bit older, 50, around 55. So it's called Your Comfort Zone is a DUI Zone. So you'll be seeing those four panel pictures on Facebook and Instagram that will, you know, kind of try to work to continue to change that acceptability of drunk driving among our biggest offenders. We're getting a grant to do some bike safety youth stuff through GHSA. So we're working on pulling that together. And Watch For Me is just going to be doing its regular posts that you'll that you see all the time. That's just a well-oiled machine, just going to keep turning it out. I think that's about it. I mean, nothing too huge this time of year because it's getting a little bit cold, but yeah.
Excellent. And I think last on my screen, Tony, do you have any more updates from BCCO?
I had just some interesting stuff coming up. Some of it are, some of it others. We're continuing our do-it-yourself repair hours and trying to increase membership so we can add another night of that. Ideally a WTF night or a women trans femme night. And the we'll be, interestingly, I think e-bikes are a topic we're particularly interested in, both from an e-bike rebate pilot that we think would be important for low-income EV mobility, as well as car replacement, either as a, you know, taking a two-car family to a one-car, or just trip replacement for existing families that would move towards more walking and biking trips if they had an e-bike. And that will likely come up this week at the CT Cheaper meeting, which I happen to be on the board for. Hopefully we can get Connecticut Deep to consider a bicycle as a vehicle. In 2020, they got a legal opinion internally that a bicycle is not a vehicle and therefore an e-bike is not a battery electric vehicle, which we disagree with very strongly. And I think a lot of folks disagree with that, but it's a very perverse legal opinion on behalf of Deep. So we'll be working on that this week. We're excited for the meetup on Friday morning in the West End. And we are also interested in the state level bike and pedestrian advisory board meeting that is later at 9 a.m. on Friday. And super excited about the complete streets, the open streets, Ciclovia type events that Hartford is planning in next year on Sundays. If it hasn't been posted yet, I'll post the link to volunteer, get more information on those open streets events in the chat. Unless Grace wants to drop it in there.
All right. Well, thank you all very much. Any other updates? Did I miss anybody? Okay, so I guess we're at the end of our time here. We'll take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Who is the second?
I'll be the second.
Okay, excellent. All right, we're adjourned. All in favor, I guess. You know, aye.
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 Thanks.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.